All right. Where do we go? The New Covenant? Jeremiah 31? Nope. It's before that. Who? What? Probably not Psalms. Sheila got it. Proverbs. Of course we go to Proverbs. Because Proverbs is where the table of contents is. But it's not in the table of contents. But that's a good place to start. Because we're at least in the right... Yeah, who said Proverbs 2? Yeah. Now let's do this orderly. Romans 8, 14 and 15 correspond in the table of contents for a son, no matter when he, what program he's in, whether he's in Israel's program or our program. This is the overall lay of the land of what your sonship life is going to entail. And when the father first takes his son and adopts him as his own, he's going to cause him to be aware, to know wisdom and instruction. And in that, he's going to orient his son to being his son. And as we were talking before, one of the very first things he's going to get in his thinking is that I am now your father. You are now my son. And all that that entails. And there's a bunch of things. I'm not going to go back and review all the things that that does. But in the table of contents, in Proverbs chapter 1 and in verse 2, that corresponds to sonship orientation. When, let me see what I put on here. When we look at that, in the curriculum, and we're looking at level 1, to know wisdom and instruction, Proverbs chapter 1, verse 2a, to perceive the words of understanding, Proverbs chapter 1, 2b, Proverbs chapter 1, verse 3, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity. That's your entire first level of sonship education. The actual education where you get into the classroom and open the book and the father really starts going and blowing and instructing you and just giving you all this instruction takes place by the when you start receiving these four decision-making skills. And that begins in Romans chapter 12. So what our father accomplishes in the first phase of sonship education isn't to instruct you in anything so much as to get you prepared for the rigors of that instruction. And it's going to be rigorous. I was going to say something there, but I'm not going to. The orientation that takes place up there in the first part of phase one is to acclimate you and, as it says, orient you to being a son. There are two components that you're to know, wisdom and instruction. And when we come to appreciate the way in which the book of Proverbs, I don't know why I'm still in Romans, I need to get back there myself. When we've come to learn and understand and appreciate the structure of the book of Proverbs and the way God wrote this through Solomon as an example of what a son being instructed by his father David was like, really, this first section is David doing the talking. The father's doing the talking. Solomon is doing the receiving. It's not until you get over, that's why verse 1 of Proverbs, chapter 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. When you get over to Proverbs chapter 10, it's the Proverbs of Solomon. David is left off. Between the end of the table of contents, which is verse 6 of chapter 1, and chapter 10, verse 1, what takes place in the book of Proverbs? What is all of that? The exhortations and the corresponding doctrine for Israel, but the exhortations are found there. And what have I told you and taught you repeatedly? And you sat there and probably thought, yeah, but get on to better things. That these exhortations are just as critical as the doctrine. And that's tough for us who came from those doctrinal backgrounds, where nothing was greater than Bible doctrine. nothing is greater than Bible doctrine, but there are a lot of things that are just as great as the doctrine, because the Father can't accomplish the imparting of His heart to His Son merely by doctrine alone. It takes more than that. This is the failing of most pastors who teach categorically. They never understand how the Father created the human heart. So we not only have an appreciation for, as I did with this chart, each one of the components of level one, where it is in the book of Romans. We broke all that down. Paul follows this thing. It's one of the most amazing jaw-dropping things about how God's Word is put together. You can actually see Him following this. But then we did this chart where we took those same verses in Proverbs and we underscored the corresponding exhortations. And when it comes, there's a point in the son's orientation. Now, again, let me just test you real quick. Up there, I like to point, but this whole thing is taking place where in Romans? 8, 14, and 15. All of that's taking place there. It's not all mentioned and delineated there, but chapter 8, verses 14 and 15 is the orientation of the son. You would know what that comprises by knowing what the sonship life is going to be like as far as its table of contents goes from the book of Proverbs. You're alerted to it. So we know, both from the table of contents and the corresponding exhortations, that to know wisdom runs from chapter 1, verse 7 through 19, and to know instruction occurs in chapter 2, the first 9 verses. So what I'm after is that from chapter 7, verse 1, all the way through verse 9 of chapter 2 is the corresponding exhortation for sonship orientation. So everything in there is going to be important. Now, let's look at something sitting in exhortation. This one right here. Let's look at something sitting there in Proverbs chapter 2 that in view of it being there as a corresponding exhortation of sonship orientation, which would be in our thinking, that would be where we were in Romans 8, 14, and 15. In view of it being something that is a natural issue in sonship, whether you're in Israel's program or whether you're in the program with us today as the members of the new creature, the church, the body of Christ, that will bring your thinking in line. And you're not going to be just able to say, should I pray? Well, yeah, I should pray. Why? Well, because God's my Father, I'm His Son, and He expects me to talk to Him. True, but not the root reason. Not the reason He told you. By the way, it's not the reason that I exhorted you to. And when I was telling somebody at the break, I said, when you see this, you're going to say, duh, I knew that. I know you know that. That's not what this is about. This is getting you to think the way your Father thinks and to shove out of your thinking all unnecessary assumptions of what prayer means and why it's necessary. And this is going to bring your thinking in line with the naturalness, the natural process, and the progress of this activity we call sonship prayer. Now, what I'm after specifically is sitting in the first four verses, five actually, but let's look at the first four verses. He says in chapter 2, verse 1, "My son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee, so that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thine heart unto understanding. Yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding, if thou seekest her as silver and searchest for her as for hid treasures," stop right there. These are what we call, and what we call at one time, the son's commitment level, or the measures of his commitment that a father will have to, at his son's, somewhere as his son's orientation ends, he's going to set his son down, and we went over these, and he's going to make sure that these things are there, because his son has to recognize that this is going to take a lifelong commitment. And therefore, the first thing that verses 1 and 2 deal with is the issue of honest attendance. And we're not going to go back over all the details of this. I just want to point it out. If all three of these start with an if, and then they're summarized by a then. If thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee, so that thou incline thine ear. By the way, don't get thrown off by the word commandments. Paul will use that word too. He's not talking about the Ten Commandments. He's not talking about the law. If you think the law enters into this in any way, shape, or form, you really haven't had a lot of things work effectually in you. But a father gives a son commands. They're not the law of Moses. And a mother does too. That's why a mother's brought up in here as well in the exhortations. But so that verse 2 goes on, thou incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thine heart unto understanding. When we went over that, we talked about that issue in verses 1 and 2 being honest attendance. By this time, in this assembly, nobody should be here unless they are honestly attending, because there's nobody to impress. You're not impressing me if you're absent, and you're not impressing your father. You're not coming here to hear me tell a war story or to tell some story about my days in Chicago or some other goofy thing. You're actually honestly here because you want this curriculum. You're crying, Abba, Father. The next if we'll come back to in just a moment in verse 3. Verse 4, if thou seekest for his silver and searchest for his hid treasures, all right, that's that seeking and searching for the treasures and everything is the commitment to make your sonship life the top priority of your life. But it's the one I'm really after. In these sonship commitments, of the three of them, there's only one that particularly focuses upon your active involvement. And it's that one there in verse 3, interactive learning. Yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding. That has you saying something. Now, I recognize that when we went over this, the force of how I presented it had to do with breaking through some real rigidness in our assembly. And this kind of is like a coin with two sides. One side of that has to do with what you and I engage in. Me as your pastor, you as the members of the assembly. And what we do in Bible class. And we came from a background where I was like George Patton up here, and if you so much as blinked wrong, why I would throw you out, you know. Or there was no talking. No, I used to remember the mantra. I can't remember it anymore, but no talking, no unnecessary movement, nothing that would be disturbing or distracting to the teaching of the Word of God. And, rah, 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 and that was in my angry days, you know. People kind of no artists by their blue period or whatever. That was my angry period. That was my pre-sonship period. And I was angry because I couldn't figure out this book, and I had to teach you, and I didn't know what it said, and I knew that this whole monstrosity that I called the edification complex of the soul didn't work in me, and how could it possibly work in you? And so that was my angry period. But We had to break that rigidity to be able to realize the need for you to be able to tell me what you understand, for you to ask questions, and therefore we talked about this issue of what we called interactive learning. This is again why a large megachurch cannot possibly produce sonship edification. You can't have 5,000 people in a room and the pastor be able to entertain questions and comments. It can't be done. It, in fact, makes it so it's impossible for that to be done. So the interactive learning is essential and vital. And I fear that what we did, and not I fear, but I think the way I presented it was so much on that side of the coin. But there was another side to that coin, and I mentioned it to you. The other side of this is the interactive learning your father, David, is telling his son Solomon that you're going to have to cry to me. You're going to have to lift your voice up for understanding to me. your Father. That's prayer. That's sonship prayer. Now, we haven't put our finger on the need for it or necessity for it, but we're getting there. And mainly we focused upon us as sons having the opportunity, as I said, to ask questions and comments in class. But I do recall, and I checked in my own notes about it, that the other issue other than that was sonship prayer. In other words, one of the issues that you're made aware of in sonship orientation is the issue of bidirectional communication. It's real. It's not imagined. It's not language of accommodation. It's not anthropopathism, anthropomorphism, or any of those other goofy theological concepts. It's not a theory. It's a reality. That's the way my Father has determined to deal with me. That's how He's going to deal with you, like it or not. I mean, you should be thrilled by it. Because this makes prayer, as I said, not just a necessity, but a delight. That I can sit down, as it were, across from my Father and be able to talk to Him and know that if I say, do you know what I learned today? He can say, tell me. And it's not just being kind to me because I already know every thought you thought before you'd ever think it, and I know everything before it ever happens, blah, blah. I know He does. He's God. But just as we would have no trouble with God confining His power, His omnipotent power, to not part the Red Sea, or let's put it this way, to not rise up land masses around New Orleans when Katrina hit because somebody in a Baptist church was praying for them, because He didn't do that, and though He could have easily, and we have no trouble confining His omnipotent power, why do we have such trouble confining His omniscient power? So that He is a real Father to us, and that we can engage Him as a Father to a son. And it's not contrived, and it's not pretext, it's not pretend, it's real. Now that's just trying to bring back into our thinking some of the things we were talking about back then, but we still haven't put our finger on the issue yet. We will here in a moment. And we've, as early on as sonship orientation, been made aware of that bidirectional line of communication you're supposed to have with your Father, and that the baby's on the way. Go ahead and answer it. I'm not standing in the way for a baby. Is it her? Oh, it's not her. Oh, okay. Verse 3 of Proverbs chapter 2, that is alerting you to the issue of sonship prayer. I'm going to have to say things. I'm going to have to cry to Him. And that, I don't mean crying tears so much. I'm going to have to cry to Him through my voice. I'm going to have to lift up my voice for understanding. Well, I'll stop right there. But that is sonship prayer. Now, in order to take that now to where we want to get it, to see and have it impressed upon you the need for it, the need for it that your Father knows and wants you to know, not just the need for it because I got to talk to Him and He won't know what I say if I don't say it to Him, but the absolute necessity, the life line and the lifeblood that is, and that it needs to be in your thinking, you have to go down to the verse that sets forth the needful results of the son's commitment level to sonship orientation, and that's in verse 5. This is where we're going to put our finger on it. Then, verse 5 says, "Shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God?" If you read that, now, if you have to understand and appreciate that what's going on here is that if you have those three boom, 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 if of those three commitment levels that a son's supposed to have, verse 5 comes along and saying, all right, all those things are a means to getting this. Then, he says, if you as a son honestly attend Bible class, if you as a son engage in interactive learning, both in Bible class and with me as your father in prayer, if you as a son make your sonship education the top priority in your life and seek her just like I said here, then the then will follow. And my point is very simple, that the then is not going to follow, cannot follow, will never follow, is impossible to follow if the ifs are not previously met. If the ifs exist, then the then will follow. If the ifs don't exist, then the then will not follow. Make sense? You don't look too sure. Right? It's very simple. If the thens are there, if the ifs are there, then the then will follow. If the ifs aren't there, the then won't follow. It's just that simple. Now don't sit there and try and say, well, this is the law, this is if then. There's a lot of ifs, if-thens. Even in this dispensation of grace, there's a bunch of if-thens. But it's not the policy under which we function under grace. So don't get... that's now you're off on a wrong track. Well, if that makes sense, if the ifs exist, the then will follow. If the ifs don't exist, then the then will not follow. Okay, then. I want you to read to me out loud, what does the last part of verse 5 say? Why is prayer absolutely necessary? That's why. You won't find it without this activity. You won't find it. You as a son. Now, by the way, that means what it says it means. You say, well, that's what I was talking about when I was trying to find the will of God. That's not what that verse says. It says you won't find the knowledge of God. You as a son being oriented, your sonship status, and this new relationship you now have with your father, you're told and made aware upon being newly adopted as a son, among many other things that you're oriented to, you're made aware that you can't find the knowledge of your father without you as your father's son engaging in the relationship with him, your father, just like those first four verses have described. That's why you're exhorted there, and why as a pastor teaching this, you have to make sure the commitment levels to learning are there. In other words, there's something about the kind of education that's now taking place under sonship that unless the son is actively, and we're going to talk about just this one for now, because that's the one that concerns us speaking to our Father, that's prayer. By the way, that's why I asked you at the very beginning, I think on Sunday, what is prayer? And you said, well, it's talking to God. That's right. There's something about the kind of education now taking place that unless the son is actively engaged with his Father in what is being taught in this bidirectional, bi-learning, interactive learning thing, he will not learn what he needs to learn. It isn't going to happen. It's impossible for you as a son or daughter of your father to learn what you need to learn without that. It can't happen. I'm not saying it might not happen. It cannot happen. The reason is because that's the way my father designed it. The nature of sonship demands bidirectional learning between you and your father. Demands it. Hence it demands, we could put it this way, it demands sonship prayer, or it will not take place. And you can put your finger right on why, when I asked the question in the first session tonight, why should I pray? Why is prayer indispensable? The reason you need to have on the tip of your tongue and in your mind and your frame of reference for Romans 8:26-27 is that last part of verse 5. Without it, I will not find the knowledge of God. I won't find it without the other two either. But what the one that concerns us is the one in the middle. I won't find the will of God? Of course I won't. But I won't even find... It's more basic than that. It's more simple than that. It's very, very simple. God has constructed this so that without you talking to Him and engaging in interactive communication with Him and sonship prayer, you will not find the knowledge of Him. You won't. Well, if that's true, then you realize sonship education is not passive. And again, this is why many Christians look at the sonship life, if they ever get a glimpse of it, and say, thanks, but I'd rather not. I'm glad to be going to heaven, I'm just going to go play until I die. That's what most Christians do. I understand that. But we're not most Christians. Sonship education is not passive. It is not designed to be passive. It cannot take place if it's passive. That's why the very first thing you're taught in sonship orientation, I'm your father, you're my son. This isn't going to be a passive thing. You're not just going to be able to sit like a bump on a log with me. You and I are going to do everything together. We're going to talk together. We're going to work together. We're going to get dirty and bloody together. We're going to suffer together. And we're going to be... be more than overcomers. We're going to be more than conquerors together. But you and I are going to do everything together. This isn't going to be one-sided. Not on my side, not on your side. We're in this jointly. And therefore, that demands, listen carefully, equal activity on the part of the Father and on the part of the Son. I just get goosebumps when I think about that. Because I think, to me, everything was, I'm just pleading and pleading with my Father in prayer. But now I recognize He has something at stake in this that He is going to be the beneficiary of. He's got something He's got to accomplish in sonship prayer. It's not just one-sided. But He has to accomplish something and I have to accomplish something. It demands equal activity on the part of the Father and Son. And sonship prayer is the arena in which that equal activity is assessed, evaluated, and ensured to take place. And that's the reason why prayer is the necessary thing that it is from God's perspective. Not from religions, but from God's perspective. Son, if you don't do this, you will never know my knowledge. You're never going to know what I know. I can't impart my heart to yours. I can't do anything, let alone be able to put you in a position like you're going to be to determine what the perfect, the good and perfect and acceptable will of God is. But from the very beginning, you're going to have probably, way before that. And there's no reason, when you go back and you take a look at those two verses that we were in Romans chapter 8, in verses 26 and 27, there's no reason to even talk about the details of that verse or the mechanics of sonship prayer or searching the heart or anything else unless you, first of all, the value of sonship prayer is appreciated first and foremost. And that comes straight out of your sonship orientation. You all knew that verse. But we went over it and over it and over it. We spent a lot of time there. And I didn't do this thinking that I was going to surprise you with something that you didn't know. I knew you knew it. The exercise is to be able to corral your thinking and stop the shotgun thinking and bring your thinking to a point where you say, first and foremost, do I know the need for this as it's assumed I already know it before I even deal with anything else in it? Can I put my finger on it? Yeah. Proverbs 2, verse 5 at the very end. If I don't lift up my voice and I don't cry after understanding and wisdom, if I don't do that, I'll never know the knowledge of God. I'll never know it. That's why I say, let that sink in for a moment and you'll see, this isn't a take or leave it proposition. This is absolutely necessary. So this thing that I've maybe been playing around with for a long time called prayer, boy, I got to get serious about this. My father has so determined to get certain things accomplished just between me and him. I've told you. You're going to have to do more than just sit in Bible class to get this. And this is one of those areas. Now, at first, I grant you, it's going to be so-so as you get going. Right now, like I said, don't change the way you pray just because I say something. Let the words of God change the way you pray. Maybe you haven't ever ventured into talking to your father about things, or you feel a little bit apprehensive about talking. But you'll find, as you get along, you'll find the bulk of what you and him discuss have to do with this curriculum and how it's effectually working in you as much as it does talking to him about getting you or someone you love or care for out of a bad situation. But what I wanted to accomplish tonight was to appreciate the value of sonship prayer. And I mean not just appreciate it theoretically or theologically, but appreciate it for the vital thing, the indispensable thing that it is. Because just like that passage tells me, if I just take verse 3, if I cry after knowledge and lift up my voice for understanding, then I will understand the fear of the Lord, but then I will find the knowledge of God. And that knowledge of God circumscribes the entirety of the sonship curriculum. You're never going to understand this curriculum apart from that activity going on a daily basis. That's why I should pray. Not just because I'm in a tight spot and I've got to get out of it. Not just because my 401k tanked, which I don't have one, but no. Because if I don't engage my father in intelligent sonship prayer, I'll never find his knowledge. And that takes it into a whole nother level. That takes it to the level of indispensability. It's indispensable. I can't just be flippant about it. And by the way, I'm slowing down and I'm trying to make sure this sinks in with you and not letting go of it, so to speak. Because if my understanding is correct, a son needs to be hit square between the eyes with the realization that he is going no place in this relationship without sonship prayer. That's what that's doing. It's like a ball peen hammer. Boom. You are never going to get anywhere in this without doing that, without engaging me like we've in this relationship like we've discussed. And that's because, as I said, the Father designed it that way. It makes it a real relationship, not a theoretical one. Well, if you're going to get the proper understanding and appreciation of anything that Romans 8, 26 and 7 says, you have to get off on the right foot. And you need to get the need and the necessity for prayer in the first place in your thinking, because that's what it assumes. I'm not making this up. That's what those two verses assume at their root, that you know the need for this. The next thing we need to do is find out, all right, I know the need for it. Where was I told some things? By the way, you weren't told you had infirmities. I may have said that wrong or said it badly, which is not unusual. I usually say things badly or poorly. But you were told things that made you aware, hey, wait a minute. You ever be in a class like chemistry? That's one that leaps to mind because I had probably the worst. Yeah, it's funny because some of you people in here are great at chemistry. I had one of the worst chemistry teachers. He seemed like the only thing he was ever concerned about was if his fly was up or not. He would check his fly every time. For every 5 seconds, he was checking his fly. And it just drove anybody in there crazy. But if you've ever been in a place where some guy has said some things to you and then you get a test or something and you think, well, wait a minute. I don't know what that is. I mean, he may say something. I mean, my chemistry teacher would just start class. He wouldn't tell you to open your book or where to. He would just pull this chart down and start 2P2, 2P1, 2S1. He'd just start going down with, what is 2P? I know what a 2 is and I know what the letter P is, but I have no idea what that means in some electron configuration notation or whatever it was. That's kind of what this is like. Your father has already showed you some things. You know what those things are, but when you looked at them, you said, wait a minute. I don't know what, I see what it is, but I don't know what to ask for in that. And that's what we're going to identify what the infirmities are. Again, it's not that you know what they are. If you knew what they were, you'd be able to ask for them, right? But you do have an awareness, or should have an awareness, that's by something my father has said, I'm concerned because I know when it comes to that thing, I don't know what in the world to ask for. When it comes to this other thing, I have no idea what to ask for. That's something that I will know what to ask for in level 2. But right now, I don't know what to ask for. But if I don't have it, I'm stuck. Verse 26 and 27 come along and say, don't worry about it. Relax. Just talk to me anyway. Because we've got it made so that the Spirit is going to make intercession for you, and He's going to ask me what you need to ask anyway. And until you get your legs under you, we've got that whole problem solved. It's all there. You don't have to worry a bit about it. And you don't have to be reluctant about talking to me and draw back from me and look at prayer as this overwhelming thing that I don't know what to say. Don't even think about that. And so therefore, you become familiar with the fact that you've got a vital, indispensable thing given to you here, where you're to lift your voice up, you're to cry, you're to do those things that you're to be able to engage with Him. And He's designed it that way. And verses 26 and 27 in Romans 8 says, all right, you should have a frame of reference for that necessity for sonship prayer in your thinking already, in the proper order and the proper progress, and for the very reason that you as a son were given it in sonship orientation and are supposed to have it developed in you in order, in the order my father told it to me, and not with any preconceived attachments or preconceived notions or preconceived assumptions on your part that come from mere exposure to Christianity as religion. Well, this has to be a part of the son's frame of reference before he ever gets to these two verses. That's what was presented to you anyway in Romans 8, 14, and 15 in sonship orientation. All I had to do tonight, really, is to go back and point it out. But I wanted to make it more than that because it really is. You have to be able to begin to appreciate the words mean something. The words are important in the order my father gives them to me. And so, because of that issue of having a frame of reference for it on the basis of realizing the vital nature and necessity for sonship prayer, that's when the son becomes aware of the fact that, oh man, when I don't know what to pray for as I ought, you see how this makes it so that you sit there and start sweating? If you're told you will never, ever know the knowledge of God without this, And then you realize, yeah, but there's some things I don't know what to say or what to ask for. Do you realize how you start sweating bullets all of a sudden? And you start realizing, if I can't lift my voice up, and I can't make the cry that I need to make to my Father, wow, this is threatening. This is life-threatening to me. I've got some serious problems here. I can't find the knowledge of my Father, and yet I can't ask for what I want to ask for. Man, this could tie in knots. And how in the world am I ever going to do? I can't do my job. Even as the empty son, my job is to be established as his son, to get the attitudes that he has and all of these. I can't even do that. Let alone when I finally get to being instructed in knowledge, wisdom, instruction, and in justice and equity, judgment and equity. I'll never do my job with him. I can't enter into his business. I can't do my job without it. If there's any problem with this bidirectional activity of prayer with my Father, help! I've got to have some help. There it is. Verses 26 and 27 is your help. That's why Paul puts it where he does. It doesn't just come out of the blue. It's not an oddball two verses. Paul's thinking as a son. And he's thinking through his own sonship orientation. And as he goes through sonship establishment, he's able to bring something up that is a problem for you back when you were first oriented. That's not out of place. It's not just dropped as out of nowhere. It's not oddball at all. It's right in line. If you understood the sonship life and the sonship curriculum, it's perfectly in keeping with all of that. Well, we're going to stop there for now. And does anyone have any problems with just that? Yes. It's something specific. Yeah. And if you want to start working on that, keep reading through chapter 2 of Proverbs. Because it makes sense that if it's something that I was made aware of back in sonship orientation, it's found there. Now, we haven't put our finger on it yet, and that is something that I either have said scant little about to you or none at all, but we're going to have to put our finger on that too. We'll be able to identify what the infirmities are and why it is that we don't know what to ask for. There's a common sense understanding of that. It's not hard at all. It's just that we need to be made aware of it. So, anyway, all I was after is that you could go to, you need to be as, listen, I'm not kidding, you need to be as clear on this and as concise and as precise as you are with someone who says, what is the gospel of Christ? And you should be able to answer that, roll it right off your tongue. His death, his burial, his resurrection. What is the necessity for prayer? Without it, I will not find the knowledge of God. That's why I have to pray. Now, I could have said that in 30 seconds at the beginning of the first session, but it wouldn't have been as fun. And you really begin to see, boy, this is serious stuff, and all of it is important. These aren't things we can just forget about. These are things that we're constantly in use of. Well, if everything's settled on just that one issue, the necessity for it, to be able to see it in the Word of God, why it's the necessity that it is, then we'll stop right here. All right? With our heads bowed.